A movie with two muscle-bound men fighting each other. A movie with toxic masculinity. A really bad movie with not much sense in it. And a bad script. That's Fast 10. And it starts in 2 days. But we are not here for the vroom vroom. We are here to celebrate the 20th birthday of The Room. And maybe we have some more special footage of something you might already have heard of. And maybe we are the first ones in Germany to premiere that. And now, give a huge applause to my friend Greg Sestero. Even better, let's sing happy birthday to The Room.
Oh, hi guys. What a story. Thank you so much for coming out and celebrating the 20-year anniversary. It was crazy. A few months ago, we reshot the movie in one day with Bob Odenkirk playing Johnny. And I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan, like I'm sure a lot of you are. And so getting to play Chris R., which people always say is the best actor in the movie, it's like, nah, he just had the easiest role. You just literally look at Denny and say, where's my fucking money? Over and over. And I said, Bob, what should I do? Like, give me some advice. Like, I'm a drug dealer in Better Call Saul. He's like, you just look at him and you never let him get a line in. I was like, where's my fucking money, Denny? We did one take, and I can't wait for you guys to see this.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with a question from my favorite podcast, Kino Plus. Which was the last movie you've watched?
The last movie I watched was Super Mario Brothers.
And how did you find it?
Made me want to go out and play the game again. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was surprised me because my other favorite movie I saw before that was Pearl. It was a really great movie, probably one of my favorite movies of last year. So Super Mario Brothers and Pearl have some similarities, but I did really enjoy Super Mario Brothers.
But what similarities? Just quite like colorful movies.
Just like the classic, you know, feel of each of them. You know.
Okay.
I think Pearl should be a character in the next Super Mario Brothers. I think it could fit.
Yeah, with an 8-minute sequence.
One shot. Just a monologue going on and on.
Okay, Greg, 20 years of The Room. Did you ever regret being part of it, of this masterpiece? And could you tell us where you might be now if this all would have never happened?
It's been an incredible experience. I think for me, starting out, I moved to LA and I booked a movie called Retro Puppet Master. Yeah, it's about as good as its title, but it was sort of my first foray into acting. And what was really interesting about The Room is I knew Tommy 4 years before we made The Room, so I had a master class in what I was getting into. The trick was I didn't think anybody would ever see The Room for many reasons. I'm sure you guys probably would think the same thing. But The Room really gave me a chance to take a step into something. And I think the biggest thing as an actor is being in something that amazing people like you connect with, whether it's great, brilliant, terrible, beyond terrible. And so it gave me a chance to write The Disaster Artist, which put me back in touch with what I love to do, writing and making horror films. So it's been a crazy road, and I think you got to have a really good attitude and see the positives in everything you're given. So I'm definitely very grateful for The Room, mainly because of all the support we've received from all of you.
Thank you. Which memory is like the worst one, and which is the best one that came across during the whole globe with your screenings?
I really have had a great time for the most part. I've signed a variety of objects. It was an
just
honor.
Objects or
a few other things. But it's been really cool to travel the world and see how much joy The Room brings, which is bizarre because there are 3 sex scenes in this movie in the first 15 minutes that would scare a scarecrow, like in Pearl. And so it's just really cool that it's worked. So I think I only had one crazy experience, and it involved a girl in Canada who had never seen The Room, but she was there when there was a screening going on, and she it turned into a little bit of like a Gone Girl story. So now I'm writing a script about that. Maybe it's going to call the disaster appearance. And turn that. How many people here have never seen The Room before? Yeah, okay, that's quite many. It's growing. The cult is infecting Berlin, which is great.
Okay, thank you. To me, you're my most famous friend. Is there any idol who became your friend through your art? And yeah, like, who is your Greg Sestero?
I would have to say my Greg Sestero is probably Bob Odenkirk. Because Breaking Bad was a huge show for me, and I when we were filming The Disaster Artist, it was a day that Bob was filming his scenes, so I wanted to be there, and so I didn't want to also interrupt his acting, so I was sitting there waiting, and he came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, Greg, I love your book. Can I get a photo with you for my son? And I'm just like, no fucking way. And I was like, okay, how do I drop it? Like, can I get your email? I was like all nervous. And so we had a chance to keep in touch. And when we were going to reshoot The Room for Charity, there was a few choices. Obviously, there was Johnny Depp in play. He's always said no. And then there's Andrew Garfield. But I always thought Bob, having been a big supporter of The Room, having done comedy and drama, getting a chance to work with him, you know, I'd say he's my Greg Sestero.
And maybe last time you met Brendan Fraser.
I did, yeah. He was extremely nice. It was right before The Whale was coming out. And I guess he had seen The Room because he walked up to me and he's like, what's up? And I'm like, no way, really? He's like, oh, yeah, because I guess he likes A24 movies. Mm-hmm. So I suggested him to see Pearl and Super Mario Brothers as well as a double feature.
IMDb says you're working on a new project. Could you tell us anything about it?
Yes, we got a chance to do an advanced screening of Miracle Valley last year, which was my directorial debut. It's a cult horror movie in the lines of X and that stuff. But I really became really obsessed with UFO and UFO abduction stories. I saw a movie growing up called Fire in the Sky that terrified me. And so I did a lot of research on UFOs. I took a UFO night tour and I started writing a script set in Roswell, New Mexico. And the story revolves around a radio host who used to be an actor on a really bad sci-fi TV show that got canceled within a year. And he was very confused because he thought it was good. So he didn't want to let go of that persona of the character he played. So he spent his life recreating that life. And now he's a radio host in the middle of nowhere. He's a total joke. He runs this podcast out of his trailer. But late one night, there's an alien race who is trying to reach Earth and they only want to speak to him. So all of a sudden now he's like this important figure. So it's a little bit of like Galaxy Quest meets Ex Machina. Man, I'm really pushing A24 tonight, all right? And we're hoping to make it early next year. So it'll be, I hope the acting is going to be almost as good as The Room as you're going to see tonight, but we're really going to go for it.
And we probably have a double feature next year with it, maybe.
With like, maybe we could turn this into like a UFO, I see a UFO
Definitely.
Feeling here. We could turn this into like a spaceship.
Definitely. I'm pretty sure many of you also got some questions. Be aware, we're recording this for my podcast, Schauplatz.
It's my top
follow
three
my podcast.
Schauplatz podcast in the world. It's amazing.
Give me 5 stars.
I tried to give him 10, but it only says 5. So
didn't work. So just raise your hands.
Stand up. Hey, my name is Sascha Wolf. I'm also writing, and I would like to know, how long did it take you to write the Disaster Artist?
The Disaster Artist took about, from starting to finish, about 2 years. We wrote out the whole manuscript. The original manuscript was 695 pages. I was like, this is turning into The Room. And then we went through a series of edits. And what I really loved about working on The Disaster Artist was it taught me patience, because you want to get the project done and you think it's finished. And you take some time off and you get some input and you realize how much of your story you don't really need and how much you're hanging on to that maybe holds the story back. Because you got to think, when you release a script or a book, it's forever. So you never have a chance to fix it. So I was really happy it took a long time and getting perspective. So it was a good 2-year journey.
Thanks.
Some more questions.
Okay. I'm Arusha. I've started reading The Disaster Artist and I'm really enjoying it. And I was wondering if you know if Tommy Wiseau has read it? And if so, have you talked about it?
Yeah, it's been a complex journey when it comes to the book, because I started going on appearances with Tommy when The Room was discovered, you know, almost over a decade ago. And so I go to these screenings and people were just so excited about the movie, and they'd ask me questions like, hey, did you think this was going to be good? I'm like, nah, it's a long story. They're like, what? Did you audition for it? I'm like, nah, I knew Tommy 4 years earlier. Really? Where'd you meet? Oh, we met in an acting class. What? What did your teacher think? And they just... just kept going, and they're like, you should write a story, write a book. So I kind of got the idea that I really felt the Disaster Artist story would make a good movie. And so that's where I set out to write the book. But I interviewed Tommy when I first got the idea, and he was opening up about these crazy stories he had living in Europe, living in France, living in New Orleans. And I thought, that's what this is. It's a character story. So I spent a lot of time interviewing him and going through it. I think he never thought the book would ever get finished. Like, it was sort of like a school project. And then as it started coming out, he's like, my God, I gave him a copy. I don't think he's ever read it. I think he said he just skimmed it. But he landed on a page that said, oh, Tommy was dyeing his hair black when we were making The Room. He's like, why you say false statement? It's not true. And I'm like, of the entire 300-page book, that's what you want to like talk about. So it was like back and forth. And then 3 weeks after the book came out, James Franco and Seth Rogen called. And I was like, Tommy, you're not going to believe this. They love the book. They want to turn it into a movie. He's like, how you know? You just say that. Where's reality? So I was like, fine. We're having a conference call tomorrow. You want to be on it or not? He's like, well, okay, whatever. And then so we got on, and James Franco got on, and Tommy thought I hired an actor to play James Franco. So once that happened and they talked about how much they liked it, I think he's just kind of like, whatever. And now he refers to the book as the Red Bible.
Ooh.
I'm like, that's it, dude. I was like, you need to market everything I do. It's a great, great title. He said, yeah, don't get too smart. I only approve 45%.
Hello, my name is Alex. It's nice to meet you. What I always wondered was, you had this unique experience doing The Room. Then you decided to write a book, The Disaster Artist. And then you had the chance to see how people like James Franco, Seth Rogen, Dave Franco took this book and made a movie out of it. How was that feeling for you to see how this experience you had turned into a book and then into a movie?
It was like amazing therapy, because, you know, again, we all have goals and dreams, and we start out shooting for that. And so that was a pretty big thing. I was like, I want this book to be turned into a movie. So when it happened, it was really exciting. And what I tried to do is I just tried to learn as much as possible. I wanted to see who they would get as the screenwriters, how they would cast the movie. I never tried to be like, oh, it should be done this way, or this is the part of the book I like. I just sat back and just learned from what they did. I'd go to the set, and some of the days, like, Bryan Cranston was there, Sharon Stone was there. It was just really cool to see how they put the movie together and how hard they worked, but how much fun they had. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to make movies and, most importantly, have a great time doing that. Because when you make a movie, you have no idea how it's going to turn out. I mean, when we made The Room, Tommy thought it was going to be an Oscar contender and people were going to cry at the end. And so with The Disaster Artist, it was just an amazing learning experience to be a part of that.
Thank you.
Hi. I also read your book. I liked it very much, I have to say. So thank you. I was reading it during the pandemic, and it was a great, like, cathartic experience for me to read that. So thank you for that.
My question really is good. Actually, it's sort of like we lived a pandemic, and then you read it during the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. My question is actually very trivial. And so we were discussing in a group of our friends before the movie started, before the showing, we were talking about the spoons, and there's this tradition of, like, throwing them towards the screen. But we all wondered, and none of us knew the answer, like, why there are spoons in this apartment. Like, it's a very particular piece of production design, and we wanted to ask, like, is there a backstory behind this, or did they just appear on set one day and no one really knew what was going on and you never found out?
Yeah, that happened a lot every day. It's one of those things sometimes, like, it's the thing you least expect to get noticed or be remembered, and then that's what happens making movies. So it was just one of those days we were behind schedule. and we were trying to create the living room set to make it look like people lived in there because it looks so bare and wooden. So the production designer was like, we should get photos of Johnny and Lisa together and like put them in frames to make it look like they're happy and they live here. And Tommy's like, you must be kidding. We don't have time for a picture. Audience does not care. So they're like, okay, well, I guess we'll just put frames of something. So they just went to the store and grabbed some props, and in that frame was a picture of a spoon. And they didn't think twice. No one thought of it. No one even looked there because we had plenty of other problems. And you just put up the picture of spoons. So the movie came out, and Tommy put it in two theaters for 2 weeks to qualify for the Academy Awards. And the theater would put up warnings like, watching this film is like getting stabbed in the head. There's no refunds. And so these film students walk by and they're like, I don't know, do you want to go see the Matrix or do you want to go see this fucking thing? And they're like, let's just go see this thing. So they saw it in an empty theater and they loved it so much. Within 20 minutes, they were calling all their friends and then they picked up on the spoon thing. So at the end, the last screening, they all were yelling spoon the whole time. And then they would continue to bring new people. And then they brought plastic spoons and would throw spoons at the screen. So it just developed with this small group of people that saw the movie. That's why it's so important to get your movie out there. There might be people like that finding forks or knives or whatever when they watch a movie. But yeah, the spoon thing was born just like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I have a DVD of The Room, and inside is a flyer. You already know what I'm going to ask. Inside is a flyer for Tommy Wiseau underwear.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask if he ever gave you any and if they're comfortable.
He did.
And if so, show it.
I wish I wore them. He was talking about designing his own underwear for years because his fashion is one of his passions. And that's so called what he told me how he made a lot of his money. So he presented me with this pair of like Smurf blue underwear with like a big yellow band that had his name on it. And he's like, feel it inside. I'm like, maybe I'll do this later. And he's like, no, do now. So I like reached in and there's like a little pocket. And he's like, you see this? You can put condom, you can put credit card. He's like, it has a secret pocket. And I will say, like, besides the design and all that, not that I'd wear it on like an important date, but they are super comfortable. So.
Thank you.
Anyway, how's your sex life?
Hi, Greg.
Hey.
I always wanted to ask you that. So you, at the end of the movie, Mark says, as far as I'm concerned, you can drop off the earth, and that's a promise. For years, we've been wondering, what does that even mean?
I tried to change a few things early on. Like, maybe I could just say it the way I would say it. He's like, no, don't try to be Hitchcock. Don't change script. So at that point, we had shot the suicide scene down in the living room. And it was like pretty pathetic. I was even more pathetic than what you guys see in the movie. So we had the glycerin tears and it was just really cringe. So he was like, we're going to shoot again in the bedroom upstairs. And at that point, I was like, whatever we got to do to get this movie done, I will give you whatever you want. I will say the lines the way you want them. And so I just gave him that line and didn't question it, didn't try to change it. But I think he's basically saying like, fuck off. But he says, as far as I'm concerned, you can drop off the earth. So I've never heard that before, just like I've never heard leave your stupid comments in your pocket, but I'm glad I did justice to the script because then it just continues to make the room be the room.
Hey, Greg. Clearly, you've embraced all of this, everything that's happened in the room. And I had the good fortune to meet the actor who played Denny when I lived in Phoenix. And he's embraced it, too, in his own way with his comic books and all that. And I was just wondering, how is it with the rest of the cast?
I think everyone kind of has a similar attitude. We were all kind of together making something. You know, A, we didn't think anyone would ever see. I know for me, it was even crazier because I knew Tommy 4 years before. They were just coming into this thing. It was pretty rare that a movie at the time was shooting on 35 millimeter film because that meant you had a high budget. And normally actors were looking for footage or for a reel of them in a movie. But they're like, we can't really use any footage of us with Tommy. So we're kind of trying to figure out like how to utilize this. So when people started watching the movie and talking about it, it was just sort of this big joke for us, like, holy shit, people are watching this movie. So kind of like Philip and everybody and Chris R, I've seen a few times, they all embrace it and think it's a really funny story. I mean, after 20 years, you know, not many movies screen around the world for 20 years. So it's something, there's something in this movie, you know, someone who's gone on to make other movies, like, what the hell is it? Like, every filmmaker hopes for longevity with the movie. You know, hopefully they're good, but it's just something really unique that I think everyone's embraced. Are you from Phoenix?
No, I lived there for several years.
Oh, right on. I lived in Tucson for a while when I was making that other movie.
We saw you in Tucson years ago.
Oh, at the Loft. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Hi, I'm Vasily. I also read your book, and from that I learned that it was shot on two cameras, if I get that right, parallel. And which footage was used, and what happened to the other footage? Or did you guys use both footages? Like, what? How was that?
You would think, but no. It was just it was shot on HD and 35 at the same time, which means you needed two crews to operate the equipment at all times, which made it twice the amount of complications. Plus, the lighting didn't fit. And in the end, we only used the film version. So, but the good news is, because that was shot that way, you could turn it into a 3D movie. So as you're watching the film tonight, and Tommy's ass is coming near you, think how close it could be. Now we're getting into the Super Mario Bros. Oh yeah, here, right here.
Cool, thank you. In your book, you talk about one evening wanting to go out with Tommy, and he takes so long to get going, you just start watching a movie, watching like Spy Game, I think was it, and finishing it, and it turns out he was watching. Did it ever happen again, and what were you like thinking while waiting for him to get ready?
Well, what I learned really quickly, you know, picking up Tommy to go film or waiting, like 5 minutes meant 2 hours. And so I was just trying to not distract. But yeah, anytime I was watching a movie, he would peek in and basically watch it, what I was watching. And one of the times it happened with the movie Drive, which I really liked. And then I didn't know he was watching it also, but he's like, why are you so obsessed with this movie? I was like, which one? You know, the guy with jacket that you have. I was like, what? And he kept saying he knew the whole plot. So he kept watching it. And then he would send me screenshots of himself, like, watching it. Like, this scene and that scene. So that's just what he does. But I always figured to show up, 5 minutes is going to mean 2 hours. So I did. That was like my film school. I would just watch a movie every time I was waiting.
Any question left?
Okay, hi, my name's Andy. Pretty basic question. I just wanted to ask, what's your favorite scene in The Room today? And if there were any, what was the most fun to make in the process of making The Room?
I would say my favorite scene is probably the Chris R scene. Oh, right. Because it's just so genuine in what it's trying to do, but it just makes absolutely no sense. And it's just, you put that on and people's responses are like in shock. And then characters keep appearing on the roof and the weather changes. And then all of a sudden, like, Lisa and the mom are up there. And every time that happens, the entire audience breaks. Like, no one cannot laugh. And I think that's a really hard thing to do. And then one of the other scenes I really like is the alley scene where the guy gets shoved into the trash can. And it was in the script, and I was like, how do we all of a sudden make him fall? And then it also turned around that, like, after he fell, we like massaged his leg for like a weird uncomfortable amount of time. So when you watch that scene this time, Scott and I, Mike and I, are literally doing everything we can to not laugh. And Tommy is so dead serious. He's like, oh, take him home, I hope he's okay. Like, he did not get that we found it funny. So that scene always cracks me up too.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for one more question, or maybe two.
Hi, I'm Yasha, and I have a question. After all these years and the hype the movie still gets, did you have any talks with Tommy, or he with you, about a thought maybe in some future about making a possible sequel?
I mean, there's something there. I think kind of like what Cobra Kai did for Karate Kid, something like offbeat, you know, where we go a different direction. Like, I always thought Johnny survives the gunshot because he's a vampire. And there was a plot that we didn't get to put in that Tommy had this idea that Johnny's a vampire and the end of the movie is actually his car flying off the roof into the city. So I think you need to get really weird and stupid with it. And then I think there's something there. But I think the vampire flying car is kind of where you start.
Well, thank you. I'm down for it.
All right.
Okay, one last question.
Hi, nice to meet you. I never heard of The Room before, and I have no clue who you are, but no offense. Is there any
Brie Larson's in it. She just couldn't be here tonight.
I was invited by my friends 2 hours ago.
Okay.
Is there any advice you can give me before starting the catastrophe?
What have they told you?
Nothing. What?
Well, like, what have they told you it's about? Or
they told me it is the worst movie of all time.
Okay, that's a good start. I think you just imagine that, like, everything that was done was dead serious. Like, okay. He was trying to literally make the next, like, great American drama. The first 15 minutes will be one of the biggest cinematic challenges of your life to sit through. I hope you've had, like, a beer or something. But once the drug dealer shows up, then I think you're in good hands.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And now enjoy the movie, but one last thing. Throw spoons, throw them anywhere, but please do not throw them at the screen, because otherwise my boss is going to kill me and I'm going to make popcorn for the rest of my life, which I would not like to. So enjoy The Room.
Yep. Thank you, guys.